But the fontanel is the main thing.
Yes.
Pat, your mic's on.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No, you're welcome.
Leave it on and play some good music. We could use something upbeat. Something summer.
I didn't burp or something. I didn't know my mic was on.
No, you're fine, Pat.
I heard you fart, Pat. Oh, we have new classmates.
Hello, all my favorite people. How are you today?
Yuck.
Getting by slowly.
I hear you. Do you have any tests today?
Yeah. Mental health first period.
Oh, God bless you. You have to think like a crazy person. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, nah. Psych was never my thing. It's one of those things that you just kind of get through. And it's, the answers on tests are always the opposite of what you would logically think would be.
Yepper.
Yep. I hated that kind of passion. But that's one of the ones I did the best in. And don't ask me why. I guess it's because I'm crazy too.
Yes, that makes two of us, Mrs. Acker.
Makes three of us.
I was happy as long as I was doing okay. I really, you know, I was like, yeah, okay.
I'm looking terrible.
Okay, my love, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, honey.
Okay, let's get down to the diabetes stuff. The dreaded diabetes. Okay, Jordan, no problem. Laura.
Here.
Okay, Yadavet.
Here.
There you are. Hello. Nicole?
Here.
Lauren?
I'm here.
Caitlin?
Here.
Amber?
Here.
Latoya? Here. Barry?
Here.
Victoria?
I'm here.
Anika?
Here.
Stevie? There's Stevie.
Here.
Patrick, we talked to. Alicia?
I'm here.
Nicole?
I'm here, sorry.
Okay. Victoria?
Here.
Shaniqua?
Here.
Michelle?
Hello.
Hello. Snowing up your way, Michelle?
Yep. Is it snowing by you?
It's snowing down here at the school.
Oh, yeah.
We came to school today. We haven't been in school since last Wednesday.
Yep, we have it's definitely snowy up here. I can't see the road from where I'm at, but it was going pretty hard.
Yeah, I'm getting really disgusted with this, you know. I went out yesterday to go to the mailbox. We have a community mailbox. Went out to the mailbox, and I slid all over the place. I'm like, this is just
ridiculous. Hope we didn't fall.
Just crazy. Okay, Donna?
I'm here.
Tara?
Yeah.
Amanda?
Here.
Tamara?
I'm here.
And Alita.
Here.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. We're coming down to the wire. We're getting this stuff done.
Mrs. Zacher.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, I probably asked this question already. Can you confirm what chapters are on the exam for Friday?
Diabetes ones. I think it's 34. Wait a minute. I'm looking for my PowerPoint. It's the pituitary drugs, the adrenal drugs, the thyroid drugs, and the diabetes drugs. Now I haven't finalized the test. I put together a lot of the questions. There are maybe one or two or three with pituitary and adrenal, mostly dealing with the steroids. The rest is mostly all, there's a good smattering of thyroid, which there's not that many thyroid drugs, thank God. And the rest of it's all diabetes. So if that helps you to concentrate on, you know, figure out where to concentrate on. Like I said, I haven't finalized them yet. That's just
you said one or two of pituitary?
I'm sorry, say it again.
You said one or two of the one with the P word?
Pituitary, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, I can't pronounce it, and I ain't going to talk my tongue.
Not a problem. Yeah, so we'll get through that. So, and we have Thursday, I think we have three classes. So we'll get through all the diabetes stuff. We'll do a review. We'll do some stuff and make sure everybody's all on the same page, and then it'll be done. I've been working on Farm 4. I've thrown out a lot of the stuff. I'm trying to just get it down to minimal amount of theory, mostly just talk about the drugs. There was a lot of theory involved in that. There was a lot of stuff that you're getting in other classes. And it's, you know, if we touch upon it as to, oh yeah, remember this, this is why this works and why that works. That's all fine and good, but not to take up slides after slides after slides of this stuff. So it should start to cut down on some of the, you know, some of this, here's a big word for you, superfluous things that you have to know, you know, just the stuff you need to know. That's what we're after. That's what we strive for. And we'll see. I cut out a lot of the insulin part because it was, like I said, it was all stuff that you had in endocrine. There's like no reason to beat a dead horse. You know what I mean? Like as a reminder and don't forget, but not as far as like, I think I took out 28 or 29 slides altogether. You don't need that. You've already got that stuff. You've already got all that information. So we will move on to the orals. The orals is going to take us a little bit longer only because there's a couple different categories of drugs, a couple different, drug names and all. Basically, as with insulin, the oral antidiabetics do the same thing. They regulate glucose levels. Oral antidiabetics are not given to type 1 diabetics. And why don't we give oral antidiabetic drugs to type 1 diabetics?
Because they don't work, because type 1s have no pancreas function.
Because they need the insulin. You know, their body either is making insulin that they can't use, or it's not making insulin at all. So, and with these oral anti-diabetic drugs, it's helping, they mostly help with insulin resistance. These people have insulin in their bodies, but they're not able to utilize it, mostly due to metabolic syndromes. So they will put them on oral anti-diabetic drugs, and they will vehemently encourage lifestyle modifications. Because it's not only like when with people with, metabolic syndrome. It's not only their glucose that's out of whack, their triglycerides are out of whack, their blood pressure's out of whack. There's a lot of things going on in their bodies. So they need lifestyle modifications. So that goes hand in hand with taking oral anti-diabetic drugs. Just like when you take a psych drug, you do need psychotherapy also, because just giving a pill isn't what's going to help the problem. I left this on here just because it's got some guidelines to it, if anybody wants to read it. If it's new onset diabetes, they will always start people out on metformin. Make that bold. They will almost always start them out on metformin unless there is some contraindication to it. Metformin is a biguanine drug. How much do you need to know that that's a biguanine? I don't know. Know the name metformin. Lifestyle modifications, as I said, they will leave them on metformin. Even if their blood sugar comes down to normal after the first month, they will leave them on for a period of 3 to 6 months on that drug just to see what kind of, to maximize the effect and to help with, because if you give them behavior modification things to do, dietary behavior modification, you're not going to change anything in a month. You're going to need to do a couple months at least of behavior modifications so that the people are able to learn and to see how things are working. The biguanides are your metformin, which is glucophage. Glucophage is a nice drug. As I said, it's just the first line drug that they'll use. Has some contraindications, especially if somebody has an IVP, some sort of IV dye that they're going to have, an IV dye study. They need to stop their glucophage a period of time before they take, before they have the test, because it can adversely affect their kidneys. So that's something always to be, remember that, because that'll be a test question on NCLEX for sure. Somebody's having a cardiac cath, somebody's having an IVP, they need to be, and they're on metformin, the metformin needs to be stopped for a period of time. I think on the future slides, it'll tell us what the period of time is. I think it's 5 days before they should have the test. Glucophage, first line drug, not used for diabetes type 1 because they need their insulin. They don't need glucophage. It decreases glucose production by the liver. Decreases intestinal absorption of liver. And improves insulin sensitivity so that they'd start to use the insulin that their body is really making. Decreases insulin resistance. Also helps, it has an additive effect of helping with triglycerides and cholesterol production, decreasing that. And it's not really associated with weight gain when used alone. A lot of these drugs potentially can cause weight gain. The glucophage is not really seen with a lot of weight gain. Why would you use it? Once again, initial oral anti-diabetic drug for treatment of newly diagnosed type 2 diabetes. Big one. Can be used alone. Can be used with other oral anti-diabetics also. Can be used with insulin too, because it's helping with the insulin resistance of a type 2 diabetic. A type 2 diabetic will not be started out on insulin, but as things progress, they could be put on insulin and still be on glucophage, because glucophage will help them to utilize that insulin that they're getting. Contraindications, renal disease and liver disease. Alcoholism, liver disease. What are the adverse effects of these drugs, these biguanides? Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, headache, constipation. But metallic taste, a lot of people do complain about that metallic taste. You always run, even though it's not one of the major adverse effects, you always do run the potential for hypoglycemia. Reduction of B12 after long-term use. has to do with the gut and absorption. Lactic acidosis is extremely rare, but it can happen. Hyperventilation happens because they're trying to blow off the lactic acid. Muscle pain, abdominal pain, those are all signs and symptoms of lactic acidosis. The hyperventilation is just you're trying to blow off the excess acid. Interaction with contrast dyes, as we said. Interactions with diuretics, both work on kidneys. Corticosteroids, they interact with corticosteroids because corticosteroids will increase blood sugar. Cimetidine is Tagamet interacts with everything. And other hypoglycemic drugs, as I said, they can be used with other ones, but they need to be used with caution. Okay, found where I wrote it down. Discontinue the glucophage day of the test or 48 hours after the test. But I think there's a couple days before the test that they stop it too. Lactic acidosis is seen as a lactic acid level greater than 2.5. Good thing to know. Lactic acidosis can be seen in sepsis, can be seen in DKA. Little FYIs for you.
What was that range for the acidosis?
Yeah, that word. 2.5. Anything above 2.5, you're starting to get into lactic acidosis if your lactic acid level is above 2.5. The usual salt, you know, the thing that solves lactic acidosis a lot of times is fluids. Somebody that's septic, if you give them fluids, it helps bring their lactic acid down. Sulfonylureas. What do you see in the world in the word sulfonylurea?
Sulfur.
Sulfur.
Yep. Need to be careful of sulfur-based drugs. Sulfur-based antibiotics. Furosemide, which is Lasix, is a sulfur-based drug. So you just need to be careful of those type of drugs. There's the second generation drugs. Usually if you know they'll be on Glucotrol for a while. Or not Glucotrol, glucophage for a while, they will flip them over to the sulfonylureas, which is your Amaryl, your Glucotrol, your Glipizide. Glipizide being the one that you see most often used. And you can see Glucotrol and the other one, Glucotrol and glucophage used simultaneously. Basically, they bind to the pancreas beta cells, stimulate release of insulin. That's the difference between the first ones and the sulfonylureas. The sulfonylureas will go in and they will try to stimulate insulin. The Glucotrol tries to decrease insulin resistance. This is a big one. They must have some functioning beta cells in order for this drug to be effective, because what's it doing? It's going in and trying to stimulate those beta cells. So they really truly must have working beta cells, or there's no sense in giving the drug. Can use in conjunction with metformin, Glucotrol, and the thiazides. Be careful with the thiazides, because thiazides also are sulfur-based. They usually decrease this and stop it once the person has progressed to where they are using insulin. Because once they're started on insulin, their beta cells aren't producing any more insulin, so the drug is ineffective. Make sense so far? Why don't we want to use sulfonylureas? Well, if somebody's hypoglycemic, you definitely don't want to use it. Conditions that predispose to hypoglycemia, different things that, you know, different disease processes, different drugs that people are taking that will promote hypoglycemia, you want to be very careful with. People with alcohol use, what ends up with alcohol use, why it's important with diabetics and with some of these drugs. Alcoholics and people with heavy alcohol use will get a reflex hypoglycemia after drinking. They could be totally, they could be somebody that's not diabetic at all, or they could be somebody that's diabetic, and they will still have a reflex hypoglycemia after heavy alcohol, ethanol use. So that's why alcohol plays an important part in diabetics and diabetic drugs. Be careful of the sulfonamides. Take a really good allergen history. Adverse effects, hypoglycemia, weight gain due to stimulation of insulin, and then some GI upset, heartburn, nausea. What do they interact with? Other anti-diabetic drugs. Anything that's going to increase hypoglycemia. Beta blockers can cause a hypoglycemia. Garlic can cause a hypoglycemia. A lot of people take garlic as something to help with their triglycerides, not realizing that it can also cause a hypoglycemia. It can decrease the effectiveness of the drugs that everything decreases the effectiveness of. Phenobarb, Dilantin, Rifampin, TB drug, carbamazine. Everything interacts with those drugs. Those are always a safe answer. Your glyonides are your Prandin and your Starlix. They increase insulin secretion from the pancreas. They're short-acting drugs. They must be given with meals because they're short-acting. They can be used with your metformin, your glucophage, and your thiazolidin. Yeah, that word. But those also. They can't be combined with the sulfonylureas. So you can't do Prandin and glucotrol. I should bold that one. I like this being able to bold as we go along. The bold are the important things. Contraindications are similar to the sulfonylureas. Hypoglycemia, especially if they don't eat right after the dose. They really do need to eat right after the dose. Drug interactions are similar, which you should start to see a pattern at this point. Pretty much, they kind of all have the same adverse effects. They could cause hypoglycemia. They could cause weight gain. They could cause GI upset. Categorize them in, you know, put them into categories. Your glyonides. Okay, those are your Prandins, your Starlix. You know, put them in the classifications. What are their actions? Well, we know that the glucotrol, and this one, increase insulin secretion from the pancreas. Therefore, you need to have active beta cells. If you don't have active beta cells, these drugs aren't going to help. The last two categories of drugs. Making sense? This is probably the hardest stuff of the diabetics is the orals. The insulins is kind of like cut and dry. What do? They decrease blood sugar. How do they do it? By giving the patient insulin when they can't produce insulin. And they kind of all have the same. The only thing you need to know different about the insulins is their peak. Whereas with these, you can categorize them. They all have different categories. They all have different, but they all basically do the same thing. They work to decrease insulin resistance. They work to get the pancreas to increase insulin production. The glitazones. Okay. Today's not a day for big, long words. Glitazones is actose and Avandia. Let's bold them. These are special programs drugs that the doctor has to enroll the patient in the program for them. Work to decrease insulin resistance by increasing insulin sensitivity. Oops, I messed that up. Okay. I'll fix that later. Also known to directly stimulate peripheral glucose uptake and storage. That's the difference with this one. Directly stimulates peripheral glucose uptake and storage. I have to fix that sentence. That's going to drive me nuts. When do you use that? Type 2 diabetes. Can be combined with metformin or sulfonylureas. Slower onset with the glitazones. Maximum effect might not be seen for several months, which is why they give them with other drugs such as metformin or sulfonylurea to help out with, you know, until the maximum effect is reached with these drugs. Why don't you use them? Heart failure, liver disease, kidney disease. Black box warning on the glitazones. Can cause or exacerbate heart failure. Causes peripheral edema. Causes weight gain. And increases the risk for fractures due to bone mineral density loss. Those are important adverse effects to know. They are black box warnings. What do they interact with? Ketonazole and erythromycin. Erythromycin is another one of those drugs that reacts with a lot of things. Alpha-glucosidase inhibitors. I'm going to start getting you guys to say these big long words. I'm having a hard time with them. What is that alpha-glucosidase? It's an enzyme that's found in the small intestine. The drugs that are used for this to inhibit that enzyme is Precoce or Glycet. They're not commonly used or less commonly used. It helps to block glucose absorption or delay glucose absorption. Used in type 2 diabetes, must be taken with food. Not useful in directly lowering fasting blood sugars. Why don't you want to use them? Well, it's playing around with enzymes in the small intestine. So you have the GI effects, inflammatory bowel disease, malabsorption syndrome, intestinal obstructions, because you are decreasing absorption and you are decreasing enzymes working towards peristalsis and absorption of food. What would be the adverse effects if it's affecting your stomach? Would be stomach adverse effects. Flatulence, diarrhea, abdominal pain can elevate your liver enzymes. Interacts with DIG, ranitidine, which is Zantac, which we don't have to worry about anymore. They took it off the market. And propranolol, which is Inderol, interacts with those kind of drugs. DPP-4 inhibitors, gliptins, Januvia, new one on the market. Sitagliptin, new one on the market there. That one is the one that you will see most often. Do you need to know those other drugs? If you know that they end in gliptin, you know that they all work the same. You don't necessarily need to know trade names, know what sitagliptin's about, and the others go along with it. Now, how in the world do these drugs work? The mechanism of action is the delay breakdown of incretin hormones. If initially when I read that, I went, they misspelled insulin. No, incretin is exactly what they meant. An incretin hormone is released by the GI tract in response to food. Does anybody need that one again?
Yes.
Okay. Incretin hormones are released by the GI tract in response to food. So food comes down into the stomach and into the intestine. Incretin hormones release insulin to metabolize that glucose. That's the normal. What happens is this delays the breakdown of the incretin hormones so that it will reduce blood sugars. Because incretin hormones increase insulin synthesis and lower glucagon secretion. Therefore, if you're inhibiting that, you're decreasing glucose concentrations. That one's a hard one to wrap your head around. I had a really hard time with that one. It slows gastric emptying, increases feeling of fullness, reduces postprandial after meal glucagon production. Glucagon is produced by liver, or it's glucose that's transformed into glucagon is stored in the liver. So it reduces that glucagon production in the liver. Is everybody okay with that one? Basically, what you need to know about that is DPP IV inhibitors delay breakdown of incretin hormones. Contraindications, drug allergy, adverse effects, hyperglycemia, pancreatitis and biliary tract symptoms, because you're dealing with the GI tract and you're dealing with liver production of glucagon. So you will have some interference with that. So you will have adverse effects of biliary tract type of adverse effects, including pancreatitis. It can increase DIG levels. Don't worry about how it's metabolized by that CYP4A inhibitors. That's just more information than you need to know. Concurrent use. Sulfonylureas and insulin may increase the risk for hypoglycemia. Makes sense. Your precoce, alpha-glucoside inhibitor, stops elevation of blood glucose after a meal. This is important. They are to be taken, precoce, taken at the first bite of a meal. They're taken with a meal as they start to eat. They have to take that. And it can be taken with other drugs. You don't want to give any of these drugs with DKA. DKA is insulin. There shouldn't be any oral anti-hypoglycemics in DKA. Cirrhosis, because of the liver involvement with the glucagon production, and then intestinal issues. Chronic ulcerations, chronic intestinal disease. How's everybody doing so far? You guys okay? Anybody have questions? Glucotrol. And basically, for the purpose of testing, if we mention it in one of these profiles, that's what's on the test. That's what I would put on a test, would be what we've profiled. Like I said, you don't need to know all of the types of drug, you know, all of the names of all these drugs in these different categories. You know, that the way that they end, that they are a glipizide or they're a sulfonylurea or prandin. You know that they are all, you know, what category they are. So you know what to look for with them. Glucotrol, as we said, second generation sulfonylurea. Rapidly stimulates the pancreas to secrete inulin, not insulin, inulin. Hold on 1 second. Sorry. I'm going for Google is what I'm doing. What is inulin? He's not talking to me. Can anybody Google inulin? My Google's trying to put a song on for me.
Missy, what did you want to know about inulin?
What is it?
It's a group of naturally occurring polysaccharides produced by many types of plants.
Okay. So why would we secrete inulin? I think that's something to be investigated.
I don't know.
It says that it works together to manage refined carbohydrates, control sugar, and purge inflammation from the body.
Okay. Along the lines of an insulin, but not an insulin, an inulin. Okay, because I've seen the words, and that's what I was trying to figure out if they misspelled insulin, or if they really meant to use inulin right there. So that's why I decided to leave it so we could look at it and see what it is. And then, like I said, I tried to Google, and he's trying to put a song on, so I don't know what he misunderstood with the Philly accent today, but Mr. Google got it wrong.
Mine says it's a type of fiber also.
Okay. Rapidly stimulates the pancreas to secrete. I'm kind of thinking that they meant to say insulin there. What do you guys think?
I have no idea, but there is such a thing. That's all I know.
Right. And yeah, that's why I was like confused, and I thought, okay, we'll just talk about it in class because I'm a little confused on that one. But the pancreas secretes insulin. But does the pancreas secrete inulin? I don't know.
If you go back to slide 7, it's pretty much just summarizing slide 7, where it binds the receptors on the beta cells to stimulate the release of insulin.
Okay, so then that's good. So then that is misspelled. So good. Hey, we investigated. We came, we saw, we conquered. That's an S in there. Yeah, I kind of left just to say, hey, let's investigate this. So thank you for that one. Best given 30 minutes before meals, usually before breakfast. Contraindicated in known allergy. Type 1 and brittle type 2 diabetes. You don't want to use glucagon for somebody who's just they can't regulate their blood sugar. You can't get their blood sugar regulated with all of the products that they have. They don't need glucagon. Metformin glucophage, the only biguanine oral anti-diabetic meds. So that should make it a little bit easier to remember. Inhibiting liver glucose production and increasing the sensitivity of peripheral tissues to insulin. So it helps with insulin resistance. Can be given with other drugs like sulfonylureas. Your best bet with these might be to draw up med cards as to the classifications and what they can be given with and what they can't be given with. Actos. Glitazone. Can be given with other meds. Decreases insulin resistance. Actos is the one that you have to be very careful of, can worsen or precipitate heart failure. And safe use in pregnancy has not been established yet. So you want to remember glitazones, heart failure. Prandin and Starlix are the two glinides from this group. Very similar to sulfonylureas. Stimulate release of insulin from pancreatic beta cells. Therefore, you must have functioning pancreatic beta cells. The advantage to Brandon is if it's somebody that doesn't eat so many meals a day at a certain time to take their meds and all, this drug is they're able to skip meals, and they're able to skip the med when they skip meals. Januvia is a gliptin. It's a DPP-4 inhibitor. Can be given with other drugs. You can use it with insulin therapy also. Have to be careful with hyperglycemia, as with all of them. May cause pancreatitis. I had always thought that Januvia, I didn't never really worked with Januvia much, and I thought Januvia was a injectable until I started reading this, and I'm like, oh, I have been educated. I now learn. I now know. That, my friends, brings to an end the orals. As I said, there's a number of them in there. If we didn't talk about them, you don't have to worry about them. We talked about categories of meds. That's what you need to know. Know the categories that will lead you to what they do, where they work. Can you use them with other drugs or can't you? Are they primarily just for insulin resistance, or do they also help with insulin or glucose metabolism? Do they also help with, you know, with other things? Is this making sense? Good. Okay, good. Is it helping that you guys just finished up diabetes too with endocrine? Good. We've been looking at, we were talking at lunchtime about, you know, some of the meds and some of the theory, because Mrs. Weiskarger does musculoskeletal in one level, but we do muscle relaxants in level 4. So we're looking towards what we need to move around to make it a little bit more user-friendly for you guys, so that it gets us, we were able to deliver the information to you about the drugs as close to the theory as we can, to see if it helps a little bit with retaining things and making it make sense. So we're working on it. Your next anti-diabetic drugs are the injectable ones. There's not very many of them. There's a couple. There's amylin agonist, which is your Simlin. Your incretin mimetics. Remember, it's that response to food in the intestine. Incretin, it's a hormone. Stuff that mimics it, your Byetta and your Victoza. Byetta was the first one in that category to be manufactured. Your amylin agonist, decreased postprandial plasma level glucoses. So after meals, it will decrease glucose levels. Slows gastric emptying. Centrally modulates appetite and fullness. So it gets your brain to realize that you're full and helps to decrease appetite. Contraindicated in gastroparesis, which a lot of diabetics have. It's where their metabolism, their GI metabolism slows down. And their peristalsis slows down. So anything that decreases GI motility can lead to gastroparesis. And a lot of diabetics have that. A lot of people that are on some of the meds for Crohn's disease have gastroparesis issues also. Should give at least 1 hour before other medications. So it's not user-friendly with other meds. But what you need to know out of this slide is it slows gastric emptying. And you can use it with type 1 and type 2 diabetics. Your incretin mimics incretin hormone, enhances insulin secretion from your beta cells. Once again, you need some beta cells in order for this to work. So you're talking your type 2 diabetes, you're talking your type 2 diabetic that still has beta cells to use. Best given an hour before meals. Has some contraindications with multiple neoplasia syndrome type 2. I've heard them advertise this on TV with some of these drugs, the medullary thyroid carcinoma. I'm not sure what the relationship is there. I imagine it's something with the hormones that must be where the incretin hormones are also produced. Don't quote me on that. Can delay absorption of other oral drugs by slowing gastric emptying, so you need to be careful of the other meds that are being given. So both of these meds, the amylins and the incretin mimetics, slow gastric emptying, slows peristalsis, gives the patient a feeling of fullness sooner, so it will decrease appetite, promotes weight loss. And you have sodium glucose cotransporter 2 inhibitors. Do you need to know that big long name? No. You need to know that this big long name for this category is the newer drugs that are coming out for type 2 diabetes. These are your ones that you're seeing advertised on TV right now. Your Invokana, your Farxiga, and your Jardiance. Action works independently of insulin to prevent glucose reabsorption. So it's working in your kidneys. It increases the renal glucose excretion. Emphasize that. Decrease glucose by increasing renal glucose excretion. So in order for it to work, you have to have functioning kidneys too. You have to have intact glomeruli to be able to filter. So if you have somebody with an acute or chronic glomerulonephritis, this drug's not going to work for them. May increase insulin sensitivity. Results: improved glycemic control, weight loss, and low risk of hypoglycemia. So your Jardiance, your Invokana, low risk of hypoglycemia. As with almost all of them, contraindicated in DKA. Everything except insulin is contraindicated in DKA, and in moderate to severe kidney disease. As I said, once you start breaking down the your membranes in your glomeruli, you're not filtering properly. Therefore, this drug wouldn't work because that's the basis of action. And then we get into glucose elevating drugs. Why do we need glucose elevating drugs? Because glucose might be decreased. If we have a decreased glucose, we have potential for increased cerebral edema, loss of consciousness, death, madness. So the oral forms of concentrated glucose are used either A, when the patient is able to swallow something, or B, used IV when they are unable to swallow, as in comatose, as in inability to swallow. Some of them are buccal tablets, which they can put under their tongue. Some are gels that you can rub on somebody's gums and tongue in order to increase metabolism of these drugs. Glucagon is a drug that can be given sub-Q for a quick response for hypoglycemia. Hypoglycemia on your NCLEX lab values is pretty low. They identified as what, 45, I think? It's pretty darn low. Usually in any other setting, in any hospital setting, it's 70 or below that they will consider hypoglycemic. Some hospitals consider it 80 and below. A lot of times with glucagon, it can induce vomiting. So you need to make sure that the patient is safe. You need to make sure that you can turn them on their side if they start to vomit. And the beauty of glucagon is that you can give it sub-Q, so that if the patient does not have an IV access for you to give D50, you're able to give glucagon sub-Q. Let's talk about nursing implications. I just looked down and saw that copyright upside down. I don't know what that's about. Before giving drugs that alter glucose levels, know what their blood sugar is to start out with. As with that one scenario that we did, they started treating his symptoms for hypoglycemia without knowing for sure right off the bat he was hypoglycemic. He could have had other things going on. Could have been having neurological symptoms from other things going on. Do a blood sugar first. Nursing isn't in a void. There's always other people around. There's always somebody else around. While somebody is getting the stuff to treat the low blood sugar, somebody could be getting the one touch blood sugar readings, seeing what's going on. You need a thorough history of the patient, including what they take, what they normally take medication wise. You need a history of what the patient also takes over the counter and herbals, as over the counters and herbals can affect blood sugar also. Helpful is knowing what their A1C level is. Is it urgent? If somebody's having a hypoglycemic event in front of you, are you going to run for the chart to see what their last A1C was? No, you're going to see what their blood glucose level is at the minute. A1C is over a couple of months, and it's an average. Review orders, pay close attention to the types of insulin that need to be given. Are you looking at a regular insulin? Or is somebody telling you to give IV push and pH? We know that that's a no-no. The only insulin that can be given IV is?
Regular.
You got it. Regular is the only one that can be given IV. Need to know the route of administration. Do they want to give an IV? Do they want to give it sub-Q? You know that if they call for anything other than sub-Q with everything else but regular, somebody wrote it down wrong. Assess patient's ability to consume food. As we've seen, and I know we've gone through these slides a little on the quicker side, but look at whether these drugs need to be given with food, immediately after food, before food, within 5 minutes of eating. So, you know, so that you know how to keep your patient safe. You know, to teach your patient these things, and you need to teach them the reason why. You know, your drug must be given this way because it's fast acting. Your drug must be given this way because it's slow acting. Big statement here, hypoglycemia may be a problem if anti-diabetic drugs are given and patient does not eat. Patient needs to know that even if they don't feel like eating and they've taken their meds, they need to eat. If patient is MPO for a test or procedure, this is very important also. Clarify the orders, and this might be a test question you might see at the end of the week. Clarify the orders for anti-diabetic therapy. Do they want them to have their anti-diabetic medications? Do they want them to have that insulin? The answer will probably almost always be no. But do they want them to have the longer acting orals? Depends upon what the test is and what what oral anti-diabetic they're taking. So it is in your best interest always, if the doctor has not clarified whether they get their medicine or not, ask the question. Diabetes will increase. You will have hyperglycemia when the patient is under stress, when the patient has an infection, patient has trauma, which is a stress, is pregnant. There's a lot of gestational diabetic ladies out there that never had a problem with their blood sugar until they became pregnant. They have issues now, and then their diabetes, their gestational diabetes goes away after the baby. Sometimes, sometimes not. If the patient is on steroids, they are prone to hyperglycemia. So there's a number of things that will predispose somebody to glucose increases. Okay, question. Oh, we don't have the answers either, do we? Goody. A patient with type 1 diabetes is admitted to the medical unit with an acute exacerbation of COPD. He's on IV piggyback antibiotics, NEB treatments with albuterol, and an IV corticosteroid, and he's also taken a proton pump inhibitor for GERD. He takes a dose of glargine insulin every evening. This evening, the nurse notes that his blood sugar level is 170. The next morning, his fasting glucose level is 202. What is the most likely cause of his elevated glucose levels?
Corticosteroids.
Correct. Because albuterol antibiotics and PPIs have gotten out a blessed thing to do with elevating glucose, corticosteroids do. Any kind of steroid is prone to elevate blood sugars. Because, does anybody know why? What do steroids do? They get you ready for that fight or flight. So it's getting your body pumped up, elevating your blood sugar so that you have the energy for the fight or flight, if that helps. Patient education. You're going to educate them about their disease process, of course. That's what we do best. Diet and exercise recommendations. Sometimes this doesn't come across very well from a nurse. They don't want to hear about, oh yeah, you need to lose weight, you need to do this, you need to do that. They go, yeah. If a dietitian comes in and is able to address certain foods with them and certain food preferences and is able to compare, because you know we have a basic knowledge of nutrition, they have a phenomenal knowledge of nutrition. It's always better to get a nutrition consult, a diabetic educator consult, because there are so many intricacies in that, as far as, you know, eat this, not that, take this, not that, that it's better to have other consults on board to help out with the education. Teaching patients how to give their own insulin, or teaching them, really truly, like when to give their oral drugs, before your meal, after your meal, with your meal, and the complications that go with those. You always have to ensure correct dose, correct type, correct time, correct dosage. We all know the 10 corrects of medication administration. Insulin orders are always second checked with another nurse to make sure, because there's so much room for error with them, that it's always better to check with another nurse. Most hospitals require it. Now, are you okay? Is it acceptable to give insulin with a tuberculin syringe?
No.
You need to give an insulin syringe, because insulin syringes are measured in units, whereas TB syringes are measured in ml. So 1 ml on a tuberculin syringe might not necessarily be 100 units, 10 units, 1 unit. So it's always better if you don't have the right syringe available, get one available. You don't intermix your syringes. Insulin, always check your blood sugar. Roll a vial between your hands. ensure correct timing based upon meals. So which comes first, the clear or the cloudy?
Clear.
Clear first, cloudy second. After a 7 o'clock report, the day shift notices that a patient has a 7:30 dose of insulin due and goes to the OmniCell to retrieve it. She sees that the night shift nurse has removed the 7:30 dose of insulin, but medication record hasn't been signed off. Patient's confused. She thinks the night shift nurse gave her insulin. The patient's blood glucose level is 142. What will the day shift nurse do? What is the best response to this question?
D?
C?
C. You wouldn't give it because it's not signed off, because what if it was given and not signed off? You wouldn't hold it because her blood sugar is 142. She thinks she received it. She's not sure. And nobody's really sure if she received it or not. It's not saying what kind of insulin it is. We're assuming it's a regular insulin, but we're not sure. So you might not have seen the glucose drop if it wasn't a regular insulin yet. Ask the charge nurse to call the night shift nurse and clarify. Never be afraid to clarify with a coworker if a medicine is not given. And this goes with insulin and with any other medication. If you're not sure if it was given, call the nurse at home and ask her. Because not only are you doing you and your patient a favor, you're ensuring patient safety, but you're also helping that nurse not to forget next time. Because she's not going to want to be woken up to find out if she had just gotten to bed. She's not going to want to be woken up to find out, oh, I forgot to give that, or I forgot to tell you I didn't give that. She'll learn for the next time that she won't do that again. She'll be more careful.
So that wouldn't be a HIPAA violation?
No, because it has to deal with patient, what's it called? With patient information, but patient information that nurse needs and you need.
Patient safety.
It's patient safety. It's also like you need that information in order to deliver care. So as long as it's pertinent to the patient that you are, that you're taking care of, and it's pertinent to the patient she had just finished taking care of, it's okay.
Would it have to be like the secure line, or you're just calling their regular cell phone?
I would just call the regular cell phone and say, hey, did you give, and you don't even have to really truly give the patient name, did you give the insulin in room 402? And she'll go, I'm not sure. And then you could say the patient name, you could say the patient's last name, you could say the patient's first name. Make sure that you're talking to the nurse and not to a family member that's relaying a message, because a lot of times you'll get a husband on the phone to say, oh, she just went to bed, can I give her a message? No, I need to speak to her. As long as the two of you are speaking together and you're talking about pertinent information and it's patient safety related, it's not a HIPAA violation. What would be a HIPAA violation is if you were standing in the hallway and screamed down the hallway, hey, did you give this insulin? Yeah, give the insulin to Mrs. Smith down the hall. That would be a little bit of a HIPAA violation. Mixing insulins. Does anybody have any question about mixing insulins? We kind of went over that with, I know you went over it in endocrine, and I know that we went over it with that scenario. So I think everybody's pretty clear on that. I left those in there just in case anybody ever wants to look it up. It's there on a slide for you. And the nursing implications continue because they are important. Always check your blood glucose level before giving medications. Excuse me. Usually given 30 minutes before a meal, but double check because there are those meds that are given 5 minutes before a meal, right before the first bite of a meal. Metformin is given with meals to reduce GI upset. Don't forget about the contrast dye issue, because it can send somebody into acute tubular necrosis. Hypoglycemic signs. I know that you know the signs of hypoglycemia. If hypoglycemia occurs, you want to get their glucose up. You're going to do whatever you have to do to get some sort of sugar into their body and then follow it up. You do a short acting, something sugary. Follow it up with a protein, as in if you give peanut butter crackers, as if you give a piece of candy for somebody that's severely low but is still able to swallow, and then follow it up with milk, follow it up with graham crackers. Make sure your patient's eating and that they're eating the right things, that you're not like in that scenario, the guy decides he wants to have a Snickers bar in the middle of the night. Not good. Patient teaching episode right there. Patient is unconscious, you're going to do a D50. If they don't have an IV access, glucagon is available. Glucagon can be given sub-Q. And as I said, you could rub glucagon or any kind of product that they give you to elevate blood sugar. You can rub it on gums. You can rub it on tongue. You have to be careful if somebody is having, a seizure, you don't want to put anything in their mouth. You'll get your finger bit. Therapeutic response. How do we know it's working? Well, because their blood glucose is decreased and is controlled. The patient knows the signs and symptoms of hyper and hypoglycemia. The patient knows when they're supposed to contact their physician. The patient is able to tell you what diet they should be on, what times of the day they should be taking their medications. Okay, case study. We'll do this. I left this on just because it kind of looked interesting. Okay, so you have a male patient who's type 2 diabetic, and he's admitted to the hospital with pneumonia. He asks a lot of questions, and he asks the nurse why everyone keeps telling him about his A1C. The nurse tells the patient about A1C and that it provides information regarding which type of diabetes he has, if he has an infection, patient compliance with treatment regimen, current fasting blood glucose level. Anybody want to venture a guess?
C.
It's got to be C because that's what it does. It takes several months of information and gives you an idea of the ups and downs and what their general overall average blood glucose level was over that period of time. And what should A1C be less than?
6.5.
Yep.
5.7.
Yeah, it's 6.5. Some books say 6.5, some books say 7. You're not wrong for either one of those. So he was taking metformin before he came in the hospital. Then they switched him over to insulin therapy to control his glucose a little bit better. Patient asked the nurse why it's so important to time meals with insulin injections, and to give an example of a long-acting insulin. Which drug will the nurse tell the patient is a long-acting insulin? So you got your insulin glucosamine, insulin isophane, insulin detemir, and regular insulin. Which one is the long-acting insulin?
I'll say C, but it might be B.
No,
it's
C. Nope, it's C. Levemir is long acting, NPH is intermediate acting, Humulin R is short acting, and I don't remember the glucosamine. I think that might be the rapid acting, but the answer is C. It's Levemir. Levemir, the Detemir, and the Lantus. What's the L word at night? Insulin L. It's not Lantus.
Ovenox.
No, I hate these senior moments. Hold on a second.
Lispro.
Sorry, say it again.
Lispro.
Lispro. Nope. No, I'll tell you in a second. Because we're going to go back over this stuff anyway. And I'm having a senior moment. Rapid acting is, yep, I was right. Rapid acting is Apidra. Short acting is the regular. Intermediate acting is the MPH. Lantus. It was Lantus. It didn't sound right when I said it, though. Lantus is the long-acting. Lantus and Denimir. Levemir, Lantus.
Long-acting. So that's good. L for long, so
yep,
that's
good. That's what I was just going to say. It's like, remember, long. So he's taking Dedemir. Patient's being discharged home on Novolog and NPH. Which information does the nurse include when providing discharge teaching to the patient? Store the insulins in the refrigerator. Shake insulins for 1 full minute before use. I don't think so. Administer the injection at a 30-degree angle to your skin. Draw up the insulin aspart first, then draw up the insulin isophane and pH into the same syringe.
A.
D.
You have to keep it in the refrigerator?
Some of them you don't. It's surprising. I think that shorter acting ones you don't have to keep in the refrigerator. But is this an example of it could be A or D? Because we draw up the clear first and then draw up clear and then cloudy. I'm not saying that backwards, am I? I don't think I'm saying that backwards.
Before cloudy.
Clear before cloudy. Yep. So that's, you know, so do you need to store all insulins in the refrigerator? I see the regular not being stored in refrigerators.
Because my dog was on Humalog and Humulin, and he had to have his in the refrigerator.
Right. And I do believe NPH, I do believe that one needs to be in the refrigerator too. That's why I'm saying, is this an example of A and D, and which one is the better one to teach the patient? Yeah. I'm thinking you got two answers here. Because you would have to tell them about drawing up the clear before the cloudy. And like I said, I know the regular, but they're not talking about regular here. They're talking about insulin aspart, which is still, I'm looking to see. It doesn't say on here about that, but I know that they leave the regular in the OmniCell. They don't refrigerate it.
Okay, I'll look it up myself on my own time. I was just like, that one threw me off. Like a lot of questions.
I know, because as I said it, I'm going, wait, I know that they don't always store in the refrigerator, but because that surprises me sometimes, because the regular really truly is stored in the OmniCell. It's not stored in the refrigerator. Nurse enters the patient's room to complete the discharge process and finds the patient lying on the bed unresponsive and breathing. Well, at least he's breathing. Patient has a blood glucose reading of 48. Bummer. What is the most appropriate response by the nurse? You know, every nurse stands in the doorway and goes, bummer. Place a packet of table sugar in the patient's mouth. Why would that be not so good?
He could choke,
aspirate. Yeah,
he's unresponsive.
Start CPR. What do you think about that answer?
No, because he's breathing.
Yep, so you wouldn't start CPR. Roll the patient to the side and administer the ordered glucagon.
Yep.
I think that would do it. Have the patient drink orange juice, not till he wakes up.
Ms. Zacher, it says NPH insulin does not have to be refrigerated.
Okay, cool.
But if it's not kept in the refrigerator, an open vial must only be kept up for 28 days.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, thank you for that. Because like I said, I knew we weren't storing regular, but you know, I didn't know about the NPH part either, so. So I guess we do have one answer to that and not two. Anybody have questions? Anything we need to talk about? Anything anybody wants to talk about? And I'm going to try to pull up in my spare time in the next 2 days, I'm going to try to pull up an outline, get some sort of outline for you guys, okay? But my advice to you is to figure out what way works out best for you to categorize things, lump things together. Like I said, we didn't go into too many different drugs, basically because they all do the same thing. It's the categories of the drugs that's important, not necessarily the drug names. We didn't go into a whole bunch of stuff about drugs, you know, the different drugs, just what they do, when you should take them. Is there something abnormal about the side effects, the adverse effects that you need to be aware of, as in with the contrast dye, the Glucotrol that you shouldn't be taking. Those kind of things, what is different about that you need to know to be able to teach your patient to keep your patient safe? What does your patient need to know? What do you need to know so that you're able to tell your patient? The insulins, it's important to know when they peak. It's important to have a good idea of how long they last. Are they long lasting? Are they short acting? It's important to know that. Always important to know that you must know what their blood sugar is before you give them anything. Different people react differently to hypoglycemia, hyperglycemia. Some people can sustain blood sugars of 60 and be talking normally. Some people can have a blood sugar of 100 and be practically comatose. Everybody reacts differently. Everybody, you know, so that's why you need to know the signs and symptoms, and you need to have the patient, like you need to relate with the patient as to what signs and symptoms are, and to show them what their blood sugar is and how do you feel right now. You know, oh my God, your blood sugar is 40. Oh my God, let's see what's going on. Might be time for them to eat. Might be their meds reacting. What else can I tell you? What we'll do next time we meet, we will continue. We'll do thyroid. We'll continue with thyroid, and then we'll briefly, because like I said, we've got a couple classes coming up. So we'll go over thyroid, then we'll start reviewing. We'll go over everything one more time. I'll try to draw up some sort of an outline for you to see if that helps too. But my best guess, my best advice to you is make med cards. And like I said, the test is not, it's not minute detail. It's not, it's very generalized. Because I know that you guys have, that there's a lot of information that you're being given. And I know it's the end of the semester and everybody's tired. Just the stuff that you need to know, or need to know where to look at for things for NCLEX. Sound fair? Okay. I'll let you guys go. I hope you guys have a good rest of the day.
You too. Thank you.
Stay out of the snow.
Bye.
Bye.